I want to be ready to crank when we are in a once in a century economic depression. So by going into that mindset before even COVID existed, it served me really well because I was never at a point where I was concerned about whether I'd be able to make my loan payments. The good thing is my portfolio, we've ridden through the whole portfolio at 100% payment and 100% rent roll. We haven't had any losses whatsoever.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, we're thrilled you're here with us today. Welcome to the next episode of Passive Income Unlocked.
We have an amazing guest. His name is Atif Kadir. Atif, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, Atif has just an amazing background. He's an architect. He's a prop tech startup. And he's also a developer and a real estate syndicator. So he has just a tremendous amount of experience. Atif, why don't you tell us a bit about how you, what drew you into architecture and then into development and then in real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I really liked architecture as a course of study, as a field, because it combined two different interests, right? I thought it would combine two different interests that I had. One is in terms of science, technology, math, and an affinity towards those areas, as well as an eye for beauty and the ability to draw and be very good in artwork as well. I think in many ways, architecture does combine those two areas. So that was my path in as an architect. And then from there, I worked for an amazing design firm. I got licensed as an architect and realized my personality was one where I was a better fit out, not in an office behind a computer. So I worked for a really great construction company called Turner Construction for 5 years. And then I realized that as amazing as it is to be an architect in either of those environments, you're not really a decision maker until you're responsible for doling out the money. I went to business school at Columbia, then worked for an amazing development company called Excel Development. And that kind of set me into the path of being a developer and other entrepreneurial endeavors in the real estate industry.
Okay. So what was your role at the development firm?
So I was a development associate. So I was responsible for 8 different development projects over the course of the 3 years that I was there, as well as 40 different acquisitions, some of which went through, some of which didn't go through.
Okay. And were those multifamily, commercial, what kind of properties were they?
I would say it really ran the gamut. The only thing I didn't do was industrial amongst all those asset classes, but dominantly it was multifamily. And I would tuck underneath that condominium because it's kind of a similar thing. And then secondarily, hotel. And then after that, kind of a hodgepodge of everything else.
Okay, awesome. So then did you set out and become your own developer after that?
Yeah, exactly. So after 3 years, I decided to start my own development firm. And it had a lot to do with when you're working at even like a large firm or a small firm, one that operates very much like a family office where the owner's family has a large presence at the firm. There is a limit to where you can go if you are not a member of the family. And the founder, Gary Barnett, really intelligent guy, all his kids were married at that point. So I didn't have an opportunity to marry into the family. So thus, there I was, kind of ended my track at Excel Development. That was kind of the reality of the situation. And then also, I just saw that I bought my own home in Hudson County, and I saw in New Jersey, in Hoboken, and I saw how much it had appreciated in just a matter of 6 months. And I was like, okay, I got to do something. If I'm going to do something, let's do something. I'm going to do something. So that was basically the pull and then like push out to do something.
Okay, awesome. So what were some of your first development projects at your firm?
So when I worked at Extel or my own firm?
Your own firm.
So first deal was a 6-unit rental building, historic redevelopment. It was a multifamily with a carriage house in the back in downtown Hoboken. That one was a really cool deal, about $2 million acquisition, around $600,000 of renovation and stabilized value of $3.3 million. So that one was a nice project, fully leased up. We leased up right during the beginning of COVID, so in April and May last year, February, March, April, May, that time period, which was a disaster, but we did it. And I think I know, like, it's that trial by fire thing. If you do it in the worst circumstances, anything else after that's really easy. And then I also finished a 2-unit condo development also in Hoboken. That was another building from the 1890s, townhouse style, that we did a gut renovation of. Roughly the numbers, if I remember correctly, it was also about $2 million, about $1 million worth of renovation costs and about $4 million worth of sellout.
Okay. And how did you handle the capital stack for those first developments that you were doing? I mean, clearly you understood how to do this from working at a development firm, but how did you handle it when you went out on your own?
Ask people for money. So basically what that meant is, I think in retrospect, I don't want to do 70% financing and 30% equity anymore. I know it just makes your life so easier because you have less equity to raise, but it just feels like it causes too much drama. So for my investment portfolio, I only do 40% financing rather than 70. So I really ratcheted it down. That's like from the financing side. And from the equity side, each of the different deals I did were kind of a little bit different, but it was at minimum 5% of the equity was mine. And then at maximum, it was 20% of the equity was mine that I was putting in. And the rest was syndicated to family, friends, one family office, one Chinese investor, a Chinese investment firm that did housing, and somehow they were okay with investing a small check in my company. So that's basically been my investor so far.
Did you say 40% leverage, just 40% debt, and then how much equity? I mean, or were you getting
60% equity then?
Okay, so you weren't getting gap funding for these historic redevelopments?
No. So actually, the crazy part is that my projects are absolutely eligible for historic tax credits, new market tax credits, things like that. But the brain damage of trying to pursue all of that precluded me from wanting to pursue any of it. So I just did it, like, only deals that made sense face value were the ones that I did.
Okay. And so can you just dive a little deeper into why it is that you prefer a 40% leverage to 70%?
Yeah, I think for me, what I find is I want to be ready to crank when we are in a once-in-a-century economic depression. So by going into that mindset before even COVID existed, it served me really well because I was never at a point where I was concerned about whether I'd be able to make my loan payments. The good thing is my portfolio, we've ridden through the whole portfolio at 100% payment, at 100% rent roll. We haven't had any losses whatsoever. But I just imagine if we were at levels of some of my colleagues and friends that have portfolios, they're 50% of their rent roll, 60% of their rent roll. That's disaster time if you're at like 80% leverage. So I wanted to be extremely conservative from that perspective. And it's actually served us well. Like, we've ended 2020 with 8% return on equity when the Nareit residential index was at negative 23. So I think there's something to be said of not being a cowboy or a cowgirl when it comes to financing.
Yeah. Awesome. You know, you just said something which made me, before we were talking about your company, Redist, which I'll let you describe,
sure.
But it's a company about incentives, and yet your developments, you didn't use any incentives. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's interesting. So why don't you describe Redist?
Yeah, exactly. So Redist is a technology company, and we're focused on making it easy to find and use the $100 billion of real estate incentives that are given out every year in the US. So starting this was a consequence of my experience starting my own company, my experience working at Extel Development, and then also my experience being a city planning commissioner in Hoboken. So in each of those, whether it was big mega size company or small company, private sector or public sector, I just saw how insanely misunderstood, underutilized incentives were, and just knew in my gut, in my heart of hearts, there had to be a better way to do it. And that's what essentially myself and my team, we've now grown to 7 total, have been building. So that's it. In short order, it's a B2B SaaS cloud software that makes it easy to find and use the $100 billion of real estate incentives.
Yeah, that is just amazing. I mean, I come from a background of working in affordable housing finance, and it's not at all simple. I mean, it's pretty much the way you figure out financing is you just have to know everybody in the state that you're working in. You like have to know everybody, and then you'll find out what's available. So that's pretty incredible product. And I'm sure that it's just going to be provide tremendous value to developers all over. Before we dive deeper into that, I want to touch on you transitioned out of development, right? Can you talk about that transition, why you decided to transition out and what you decided to do next?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, I think for me, I really like having the ability to allow interesting areas, interesting problems really define what I do with my career. And I think leaving Extel, the thing that I had the most skill in was development. And the thing that really changed was the scale. So I went from billion-dollar projects to $2-3 million projects. And I think if you're really cavalier, you can imagine that like, oh yeah, I did this thing. So like, oh, that's going to be a cinch. But in reality, when you go that trajectory to a wildly different scale of project, there's just so many different challenges that come to be. So I went through twice on development deals on a rental building and a condo building that I finished. And I just came to the conclusion that when you're working in really expensive markets, like greater New York City, you have to be able to be low leverage. You have to be able to have as few investors as possible because of all the things that can go wrong. And you have to have really, really, really entrenched relationships with local approval processes. And the crazy part is I'm a city planning commissioner and I was doing an as of right development and I still had a hard time getting that thing done. So I think for me, after doing it twice and essentially breaking even or losing some money, it just wasn't something that was interesting to me to do again. And at least for now, in this particular situation, maybe things will change in the future. But the thing that really piqued my interest was this nugget of this idea about this $100 billion of incentives. And it's been actually really fun because leading a technology company and having 6 employees, and it's just a very different thing than I've ever been used to working in real estate. So I've had to really kind of flex my skills and my abilities in a lot of different areas that I hadn't had the opportunity to work in before.
Okay, awesome. Don't you also do workforce housing development or workforce housing, I mean, syndications, value add, multifamily?
Yeah, so I have a portfolio of investments, legacy investments from Amanath Properties. They're just cranking money and they're just actually really fun to do because I've been able to really bring it down to a recipe. And I think that's when you can really get a lot of fun out of this and the stress really comes out of it. And for me, what I found is my sweet spot is acquisitions in Hudson, Middlesex, and Mercer County. It's basically the 95 corridor in New Jersey. In urban markets, multifamily, so basically individual condos within condo buildings, which allows me not to have to deal with every problem because the association deals with a good chunk of the problems. And I have the same team that does everything. And I've essentially put together the same finishes list where I've picked out every single thing that I want that looks good, that's a great value, that works well with each other, that's available, not like long lead times, and it's consistent and they all work together. So basically add a little bit of design pizzazz as an architect into a category that usually is very bare bones. And I think it's kind of dumb when people work in that category, when they make assumptions about their tenants that they necessarily maybe don't appreciate chrome finishes versus satin nickel, or light gray versus white, or craftsman molding versus traditional molding. I think when you think really, just take a moment to think consciously about all of that, you're able to produce a product that people really like. And I think statistically, that's where the proof is in the pudding. I'm renting my units when I look at the competition on Zillow, because I use Zillow Rental Manager. I'm typically renting $100 to $200 per month more than my competition. And I'm getting anywhere from 4 to 10 times as many looks, people visiting my property pages more than my competitors. That's the proof in the pudding right there.
Awesome. So just to clarify, so you're purchasing units within condos, or how does this, what can you explain that?
Yeah. So these are typically condo buildings that have anywhere from, say, 4 to 40 units. And I'm purchasing one or more of those condos in that building.
Oh, very interesting. And then you're renting those out on a long-term basis and basically doing just a cosmetic fixer on them. I mean, repainting and doing new fixtures.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, because I was actually thinking about this recently when I was on a walk, is what do you consider, what does one consider a light renovation versus a moderate renovation and a heavy renovation? So for me, take an average unit price or value of $200,000. I'm spending somewhere in the order of, let's say, like 5 to 10% is of that value is what I'm spending. So essentially $10,000 to $20,000 is kind of the norm. And I would consider that moderate, because that is moldings, door levers, that's painting the kitchen cabinetry, changing the knobs, changing faucets, glazing the tiles in the bathrooms white. I mean, God help you, there's so much pink, so much eucalyptus and light blue tiles in Hudson County. I can't even. So glazing all of that, fixing like water stuff or this stuff or that stuff, changing appliance here and there, that's the moderate renovation. I'd say if you're doing 1% to 5%, that's a light renovation. And if you're doing 10% above of the purchase price or the value that we want to use, that in my mind would be a heavy renovation. So we're doing moderate renovations.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I've actually have not heard of that particular value add strategy of purchasing condos, renovating them, and then renting them. But you're seeming to have quite a bit of success with them. Like, do you feel like those are just, are you syndicating those? How are you financing those?
Yeah, so that's it's one of the legacy things from Amanat and my development company. And what we did with that is essentially, I think it's kind of clever. What we did was form a general partnership where there's no LPs, everyone's a GP, and everyone has pro rata returns. So what that means is there's no preferred return, there's no promoted interest, which is the normal way for a GP to get compensated outsized for the efforts that they put in. Instead, what we instituted was an acquisition fee that mimicked that amount of cash. If you were to take that cash flow from a typical preferred return promoted structure with a heavy discount rate to get to a present value single payment. So it's, I think, Brad, I love it. 12% acquisition fee. So whatever the purchase price is, 12% of that is my fee that mimics the whole cash flow I would have gotten. And every time that we do a closing, an amount of money is put into the portfolio every quarter. At the end of the quarter, we rejigger the numbers based on the then value of the assets. So essentially, we mark to market the assets every time that there's another set of closings and at the end of a particular quarter. And it's actually worked out really well, because people are able to very easily say, yeah, I want to put more money, or I don't think this quarter I have more money to put in. And we've been able to, very kind of a little bit low effort, put together a portfolio that's valued at about $4 million. Been really cranks for an 8% return on equity. And I think everyone's happy.
So. Interesting. So is that one LLC holding each property, or are there property specific LLCs?
Yeah, it's one specific one, LLC that holds everything. The reason being, different states might be different, but New Jersey institutes a kind of large number of fees on every single LLC that you file. And there's just this onerous process of having to file taxes for every single one of them and doing all these reports for all of them. So we consolidate them all to one end. And one thing that we've done from a risk management perspective is to make sure of two things. One is that no one is a guarantor of the loan. It's a commercial non-recourse loan, which helps give like a distance between the owners and the assets. And the other one is that we will soon be transitioning to a portfolio-wide loan policy, which helps to cross-collateralize all the assets. So we have a cost-effective solution, but also a very robust one for the entire portfolio.
Okay, interesting. So who is guaranteeing the loans then?
God. It's non-recourse, so it means...
They're non-recourse loans, you said. Okay. Yeah.
But that actually brings up a good point, because I know there's a little cottage industry of people being paid for signing guarantees for loans. But in this particular case, it's the asset and the cash flows from the asset is what secures the loan.
Sure. Okay. I just didn't realize there were non-recourse loans for single condos.
Oh yeah, exactly. There are. Yeah. They're a little unusual, but that's the... I get all my debt from Provident Bank, which is an excellent community bank in New Jersey. I'm on their advisory board, so I'm really comfortable with them. All my insurance policies come from that company as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're quite involved. You're on the development city. What are you on, the city commissioner?
I'm the city planning commissioner in Hoboken.
Okay, and that's a volunteer position.
Yeah, it's considered an appointed. So somebody appointed me the mayor, and then it's volunteer because they don't get paid.
Okay. And then you're also on the board of, what was the bank called?
Provident Bank. Provident. So they're a community bank, and community banks, shout out to community banks. They hold a lion's share of small business loans in America, as well as smaller real estate loans. So the same way that Main Street, not Wall Street, is the backbone of the American economy, it's community banks, not Wall Street banks, that are the backbone of the American financing structure.
Really important point. Thank you for that. Yeah. So would you say that holding these positions at the community bank and the city commissioner, has that been an important part of your trajectory in real estate?
I think so, because for me, I've been able to think more about what it is that I find curious and use that, what I'm curious about, and then use that as what defines what I do in my next step in my career. And I think by having that role and as a city planning commissioner, I've been able to really see the public side of real estate incentives, which really colors the path that I took to starting Redist. And in the case of Provident Bank, I would say maybe the connection to Redist is a little more tenuous, but I would say that it has helped me really understand the ways that you can be the best borrower as possible, to understand the risks that a bank underwrites around. And that's why, when I saw that other side of it, I realized that I don't think I'm ever going to do a loan where it's 70% or 75%. It's just too risky, and you don't end up, I'm not going to do it. Yeah. So yeah, I think that being on the bank advisory board has helped me to understand the bank's perspective on lending.
Yeah, for sure. So I know you've got a large percentage of your focus on Redist, or it seems like you do. Do you anticipate with your real estate syndication business, where do you see that going?
Yeah, I think for me, I don't anticipate doing any development deals in the foreseeable future. I really like the little portfolio that could, just because it's a fun little thing to do, and it's relatively easy now because the whole machine's been set up. My primary focus is Redist and being able to get that off the ground and produce. I don't really see any more development deals, also because the Metro New York City market is still too expensive. I think sellers are still acting like it's 2017.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure we could keep talking for quite a while, but for now, let's take a break. And why don't you tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and anything else you'd like to share?
Sure. Absolutely. So I think anyone that's a listener that is looking to leave a corporate role and start their own business, or have started a business and they're trying to grow it, that's awesome. And I really applaud you on taking that step to do something entrepreneurial, because small businesses and entrepreneurial activity is really what drives the American economy. If you're interested in getting in touch with me for advice, feedback, anything, like a virtual high five, LinkedIn's the best one, because I usually check in there at least once or twice a day. And just message me on LinkedIn, check out the Redist page for anything that you're interested in related to incentives. And that's it. Yeah. It's LinkedIn's the best one. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Atif, I definitely look forward to having another show where we really dig into the details of Redist, because I am personally fascinated by this concept. And for now, we'll sign off. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Sujatha.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.